Welcome to the Good Health Workshop, a show about health, nutrition, cleansing, and detoxification. We will support you where you are and encourage you to reach your health goals. Our purpose is to share information, raise your level of consciousness, and to keep you inspired to transform your life. My name is Donna Peroni, and today we have special guest Victoria Moran. And she is a vegan for 3 decades and an obesity survivor. She is a sought-after speaker and best-selling author of 12 books, including Main Street Vegan, Creating a Charmed Life, and coming in May, which is out already now, The Good Karma Diet. Eat gently, feel amazing, age in slow motion, celebrating a high raw diet. Her books have fans ranging from Michael Moore to Ellen DeGeneres, and she was featured twice on Oprah. Her articles have appeared in Yoga Journal, Woman's Day, Vegetarian Times, Veg News, Mothering, and Ladies Home Journal. Known for combining the ethical, spiritual, and health aspects of enlightened vegan living, Victoria Moran hosts of the weekly Main Street Vegan podcast, directs Main Street Vegan Academy, an exciting in-person program in New York City to train and certify vegan lifestyle coaches. And she's co-screenwriter of Miss Liberty, a feature film in pre-production about a cow who escapes from a slaughterhouse. Follow her on Twitter. And we'll get to all her contact information a little later. We'll give that to you. So welcome, Victoria.
Thanks, Donna.
I am, like, so excited to have you here.
Well, it's excited for me, too, because most of these shows that I do are by phone or by Skype, and to actually be sitting next to you, but hearing you through earphones, and you have a beautiful radio voice. Oh. I mean, I've known you for years, but I didn't know till today that you have this glorious, beautiful radio voice.
Oh, well, thank you. And you are a busy woman.
I am. Too much travel. You know that wonderful woman in Miami, what's her name? Anita, the ageless woman. You know, she's in her 70s and she's raw and she looks like she's about 40.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Annette Larkin. Yeah. That's her name. Annette Larkin. I asked her where people could see her. Is she going to travel? Is she going to speak somewhere? And she said, no, because I'm all about health. And I'm not about to get on an airplane and travel all over the country and risk my health. If people want to hear me, they can come here. And I thought, I wish I had that kind of confidence because I run all over everywhere. And I know it's not good for health, but it's good for carrying this message. And the message is really important.
Well, I believe that if you're in your joy, whether you're getting on and off airplanes or if you're just home, that's what it's about. It's how you handle the things that come up when you put yourself out there. And if you can kind of ride through any stressor, airplanes, what have you, and you can still just find some sort of way to conjure some pleasure and happiness and...
That's a good way to look at it. I've discovered the Delta lounges that if you get an American Express card that costs extra money, you get to go in these lounges for the first class people, even if you're not flying first class. And just the fact that they're quiet, as opposed to that din of the airport, it makes a big difference. And I've studied a lot of Ayurveda, and I'm a Vata in Ayurveda. You look like a Vata.
I am so Vata.
I'm looking at you. Oh, you have the slender build and that. And I think there's too much noise for everybody on earth these days, but particularly for this Vata kind of temperament. Oh my gosh, just a little quiet, a little bit of slowing down. Yeah. It's almost like getting a massage or something. Mm. It's just like, take me out of the cacophony and it's all better.
Vatas, for our listeners, tend to be more sensitive. We are very tuned in, so we feel things.
Yeah, and people who don't know their body type, Deepak Chopra's website, if you just Google Deepak Chopra and Ayurveda, AYURVEDA, there's a quiz there that'll tell you, you know, what your body type is. And it's actually quite good. I mean, I've had people do that and then go to an Ayurvedic physician who does the same thing by looking at your tongue, by listening to your pulses. And virtually 100% of the time, the questionnaire lines up with what the practitioner also says.
Gabriel Cousins also has a whole questionnaire in Conscious Eating.
It's a beautiful book.
Yeah.
Oh, nice book.
So let's talk about you.
Okay.
So we heard a little bit about your story in the bio that I just read, but I would love to hear, because you're an author of so many books, you are a vegan for decades. How did it all start?
You know, I think it may, I don't know, maybe it started before I even got here. I kind of think we all have a plan and something that we come to this earth to accomplish. So I had three parents. It wasn't in vitro fertilization. It was that my parents both worked. And so they hired this woman to live with us and take care of me. And she was very spiritual. She told me that there were vegetarians in the world when I was 5 years old. And even though I lived in Kansas City, Missouri, which was a big steak and barbecue place, and I'd never heard of vegetarians, it rang true somehow. And it was filed away early on. I was also a fat kid. My dad was a diet doctor. My mother worked in kind of the precursors of health clubs. They called them reducing salons. They had lots of machines that jiggled your body. And so I was a fat kid. I was bad for business. So I was interested in nutrition. And I remember as a very little girl, I was about nine, and trying desperately to fix myself because my parents were periodically putting me on these horrible diets. That didn't fix me. But I climbed up on my dad's desk to get to the top level of his bookshelf because there was a great big book he had had in medical school called Alimentarius Humanus. And I don't know how I knew that that was about food. I must have looked it up or something. And so that was his nutrition textbook from the 30s or whenever. And I opened it up, and even though most of it I couldn't understand, it was a lot of chemistry, there was a chart that, interestingly enough, is almost identical to Dr. Furman's Andy chart that you can see at any Whole Foods market today about food with the most nutrients per calorie. And the whole first dozen foods I had never eaten, I'd never even heard of. And I thought they were things like collard greens and kale and arugula. I didn't know even how to pronounce these things until we got down to spinach, which I recognized. And that was the first time that I realized, you know, maybe there's something else going on here, that if I'm not eating the best foods, even though my dad's a doctor and it's, you know, it's 1960, we should know everything. it was a real wake-up call. And so when I got into yoga in my late teens, and the books that were available on yoga then all said you have to be vegetarian. So my love for animals, my interest in yoga, and my desire to be healthy and get over this overweight situation kind of converged so that I did manage to become vegetarian at 19. Didn't make it to vegan or healthy until my early 30s because I was a practicing binge eater and I needed recovery from the inside out. And once I got that through 12-step programs, basically through a 12-step program, I guess that's exactly how it happened. That's how I got recovery. And then I could choose what I wanted to eat. I chose vegan. And then it became this incredible journey of natural hygiene and macrobiotics and Dr. McDougall and raw and not raw and all this learning. So it's really been quite a colorful adventure.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Well, let's take a moment for our listeners who maybe they've heard the word vegan. You know, maybe they sat at a table in a restaurant and some annoying person was telling the waiter they wouldn't eat certain things. But let's, since we're both vegans, longtime vegans, could you define it?
Sure. A vegan is someone who is committed to living compassionately and vibrantly. And how this equates to actual life in the world is that as a dietary vegan, we eat from the plant kingdom. So we may eat fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds, legumes and whole grains. We don't have to eat all that stuff, but those are the vegan food choices. And you notice the animal foods are missing. Ideally, if you're a health-conscious vegan, most of the processed foods are going to be missing as well. Ethical vegans also opt to be very fashionable and beautiful and have wonderful lives without the use of fur, leather, wool, silk, all these things that when you first hear about it, especially something like wool, like, well, what's wrong with wool? You know, the sheep grows wool. You have to cut it or he'd be too hot. Well, yeah, until you come to see what really goes on. And as Jay Dinshaw, who was a co-founder of the American Vegan Society, used to say to me when I was back in my 20s, and he was mentoring me, trying to bring me along into this way of life, and he would say, whenever humans get their fingers in the animal's pie, the animal suffers. So in the case of wool, we know that the mutton industry and the wool industry go hand in glove. There's a lot of incredible cruelty that happens, particularly in the Australian wool industry, where most of the wool comes from. So nowadays, that there's all these wonderful organic cotton sweaters, their Vote Couture, fabulous coat company for wonderful eco-friendly all-vegan coats. So you can explore. You know, so many people say, it's too much. I can't get rid of all my shoes. Well, no, don't get rid of all your shoes. Just the next time you need some shoes, just see what you can find in the vegan footwear world. And it makes everything in your life feel like you're making a difference. You're saving lives. Every little thing, every time I have a meal, every time I get dressed, I'm thinking, the world is getting better because I chose this instead of that. Mm-hmm. It's really a fabulous way to live.
Yes. I'm trying currently to just convert all my at-home clothes, my like comfortable clothes at home, to be organic cotton. Mm. And I actually feel better.
Oh, organic cotton is the most amazing substance. I haven't gotten as far as that conversion. My latest conversion clothing-wise, I've gotten to the point where everything is vegan. I was buying for a long time before Leanne Hilgart founded Vote Couture. It was very difficult to find a really attractive dress-up winter coat. So I would get secondhand coats that were wool, but I figured I wasn't causing any cruelty since they were secondhand. But now all that stuff is gone, and everything, as far as I can tell, as I'm scanning my closets in my mind, everything is cruelty-free. So my next thing has been to not purchase anything that isn't made in the U.S., Canada, Europe, someplace where I know that people are treated well. I watched a documentary called The True Cost, and I was just stunned by the human cruelty that goes on, that we want to have all this fast fashion. So, okay, the next thing is organic cotton. Thank you for giving me yet another phase to reach.
So when you made this change, how many years ago? We're saying it's been a few decades you've been on this journey.
Well, I went vegetarian in 1969 and vegan in 1983.
All right. And did you experience some changes besides the weight loss in terms of your energy, your...
You know, I was really young. And so, you know, I didn't notice anything when I went vegetarian. But when I got rid of the dairy, I went a whole year without getting a cold. And I do tend toward respiratory infections. My dad was actually an ENT, a sinus doctor, and he went into that because his family had so much of it. And then my mother was a patient. So it's like, oh my gosh. And then I learned that at some point in my life, I had mono and I have the Epstein-Barr virus. Mm. And that means that I'm prone to giving myself colds. I didn't know this until fairly recently, that most of us, you have to catch a cold from, you know, touching something. You know, you touch the subway railing and then you touch your nose and you get a cold. But you can actually reactivate latent viruses if your immune system isn't where it needs to be. And so I do have that, and I have to watch it to this day. But I did notice very strongly when I got rid of the dairy, even that got better.
And it seems like you've explored different approaches to being vegan, and we're going to talk about your new book soon when we come back after our break, which I'm looking forward to, in terms of your exploration as a vegan. So let's take a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Good Health Workshop, and I am here with the fabulous Victoria Moran, and we are talking about veganism. And we finished off the last segment with talking about how there's different approaches to being vegan, and Victoria's brand new book, The Good Karma Diet, explores this very subject. So, Victoria, share with us a little bit about that insight.
Yeah, well, in 2012, I wrote a book called Main Street Vegan, which has really created a whole new image and a company for me. Main Street Vegan has done really well. And that book was really very open door. You know, everybody, y'all come in, you know, it's easy. You can come at your own pace and figure out, you know, where you want to be within this wonderful world of healthy, harmless living. And so many people who read that book said, okay, I'm in, I'm doing this, it's great, but excuse me, you're 65 years old and you look really good. What do you do? And so there is kind of an advanced class, which certainly you live, Donna, and you're one of my mentors, and I admire you. And even though you're younger than me, I think, well, maybe I'll be Donna when I grow up. So there are all kinds of levels to this and different strokes, I think, for different folks, as it said. To me, the way of eating that makes the most sense for us as physiological organisms is to eat real food. And everything that I see from the scientific studies, that means real plant food. Now, can somebody eat a little bit of animal food and still be healthy? Of course they can. But to really get it to where we want it to be, if you want to be summa cum laude with your food, you want to eat whole plant foods, which with, I believe, a lot of raw food, simply because when you haven't processed the food at all, you know, we all say, don't eat processed foods. Well, I can really see why, because when you start reading labels on foods that are processed, you start seeing how much sodium is in everything. And we're way overboard on the sodium. I mean, the people who have the lowest sodium intakes, who are some of these, you know, native tribes in South America and places that eat absolutely nothing processed and very little meat, you know, they have normal blood pressure. They don't get these problems that we have. So there's a lot of sodium in processed foods. There tends to be a lot of sweetening in processed foods. And a lot of it, you know, is the really bad kind of sweeteners, the refined sugar, the corn syrup. And then also some of the fats in there are not the kind of fats that we're able to metabolize. So if we can focus at least 90% of the diet on the kind of food that grows up out of the ground, it's all to the good. But when you think about it, everything that we do at home is also a kind of processing. Now, it's a much better processing because we put love into it. We put care into it. And yet, you just don't want to cook most of your food to death. Now, I am not a raw person 100% of the time by any stretch of the imagination, particularly as it gets colder. Sometimes in the summer, I eat so much raw food that I think, wow, I'm a raw fooder. And then the first cold wind of autumn, no, I'm not. So it's varied. And for me, it happens to be very seasonal. I do know that people have healed on every kind of plant source diet. People have healed on all raw food. People have healed on high raw food. People have healed on raw food with tons of fruit, the 80-10-10. People have healed with no fruit, like you might get if you went to Hippocrates Health Institute. People have healed on macrobiotics, where they cook everything, which amazes me. Because whenever I've tried to do the thing where you cook everything, I remember once years ago, I was kind of into that. And my husband called and said, what are you doing? And I said, cooking food. And that was just a Freudian slip that to me, I don't want to take those enzymes away and diminish the vitamins. And that's not on every single food with the vitamin thing. Some of them, it's fine to cook and you still keep the vitamins. But generally speaking, I think anywhere from kind of 70 to 90 or more percent raw seems to be how people do the best. Now, there hasn't been enough scientific study on this to be able to say this study, because they haven't looked at a lot of raw people. They've looked at a lot of vegans and vegetarians, and we do come out better than the omnivores, almost hands down. But with raw, I'm thinking mostly of my observations. And because I've been around this world, like I said, initially going vegetarian in 1969, before most people were born, I've observed who does the best, who ages the best. And it seems to be the people who are nearly all raw. They just have this wonderful spark. I mean, we've got Mimi Kirk. We talked earlier about Annette Larkins. We've got Sherry Saria from the Living Light Culinary Institute. We've got right here in New York City, that wonderful doctor on Staten Island, Fred Bishi. I mean, he's in his 80s and he's doing Qigong and he's tall and straight and his brain is as clear as it's ever been. And I pay attention to that, and that's what I want.
Beautiful. Yeah, Dr. Bishi, who's one of my mentors, he'll say, it's what you leave out.
Yeah.
So we're so focused on, what to eat. But, you know, as soon as you remove the stressors, the foods that may create waste in the body, obstruction, clogging the arteries, you know, putting an impact on the immune system, then the body has to work on that, has to deal with that. But if we leave the processed foods out, the added sugars, the greasy food, then what's left is basically very healthy food, and the taste buds do change. You know, once you start to embrace that and make space for what's good, then you'll start to crave that. But we get very addicted to a lot of that processed food or the sugar and that type of thing, the salt, the bad salts. I mean, so I really appreciate his attitude, his thought process.
Yeah.
So what would be your top picks in terms of like someone who's exploring a vegan diet, like things they would need to pay attention to or important little tidbits of that would be helpful?
Yeah. Well, I have kind of a little acronym for the word vegan, and I'll just go through that quickly. And so V is to validate your choice, and that means to really look into this and do your reading. I mean, Main Street Vegan is a great basic book. I'm just reading right now. I was telling you before the show, Michael Greger's new book. It's called How Not to Die, and it's so amazing. And so, you know, you find some great books. You find some wonderful sites. I mean, I like the Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness page on Facebook, because anybody who's still carrying around that little, well, yeah, okay, you can probably be okay as a vegan, but can you really thrive? Can you really be an athlete? Yes. And so you get the information and then it helps. And so the next thing, if we're E and the word vegan, is embody a healthy lifestyle. There are all kinds of vegan convenience foods out there now. Now, when I started out, when I went vegan in 1983, I mean, there was nothing. I suppose if you wanted junk food in those days as a vegan, you could have a Planters peanut bar, maybe. I don't know. But there was really very little. If you're going to be vegan, you're going to be healthy. And at that time, people who went vegan on average lost about 15 pounds. And people's cholesterol plummeted. And on an average of 3 weeks, people with elevated cholesterol were down at that normal range in the 140s, 150s. I mean, it was just a different world. And now, of course, they're vegan donuts and ice creams and cupcakes and all kinds of other things. So is this terrible? No, I don't think so, because why should we have less choice than an omnivore? And every now and then, especially if you have kids and they want a cake that looks like their friend's cakes and they want a pizza with melting cheese on it, you know, we've got that stuff. But if you really want to embody this healthy lifestyle for your own benefit, but also if you want to do this because you're an animal rights person or you're an environmentalist, you want to attract other people, and you're going to do that if you're healthy. Then we've got G in the word vegan, which is get to know other vegans. And so you can get to know us through podcasts like this one, through online interchange, but also look in your community. People say, oh, there are no vegans around here. I was working with a woman once who lived on a little island off the coast of one of the Carolinas, and she said, there's no vegan around here. And we just went to meetup and Googled, and lo and behold, there was a vegan meetup right on her island, and she didn't even know it. So we are out there. A in the word vegan is add more to your life than you subtract, because we have this idea, we don't eat this, we don't do that. But how about discover these incredible fruits and vegetables? I mean, whoever had a durian before you went vegan or high raw? I mean, whoever even heard of it? I know a lot of people say it smells bad. I think it tastes so good, it makes up for the smell. You go to the farmer's market, you see how many vegetables come in purple. We just bought a purple cauliflower. I mean, cauliflower is an amazing food anyway. It's in the cabbage family. It's got those wonderful phytochemicals you can't get anyplace else. But you get one that's purple, and so it's got even more because of that wonderful intense color. So add all this stuff to your life. And then finally, N in the word vegan is never forget the animals. Because whether we're doing this for our health or for whatever reason, the fact is, if you have a meal and it's not so hot, you'll get over it. But if there's somebody on your plate, somebody who would have rather been alive, that's all and everything. Mm-hmm. So get the whole picture, and then it becomes an incredible adventure.
So on that note, could you share a little bit about how vegan is, would how it makes the world a better place?
Oh, totally. We live with other forms of life. And we know if we share our homes with dogs, cats, birds, horse, well, he wouldn't be in the home, but you know, nearby, we know that these beings have personalities, they have emotions, they experience fear, anticipation, jealousy, joy, all those kinds of things. But somehow we close our minds off. We think, well, cows and pigs and chickens and turkeys in goats and sheep and whatever else people eat, they don't experience that. So not true. I mean, we know that all these creatures, even chickens, and I just want to give a word out here for chickens. Chickens are really smart. They can recognize other chickens. They can recognize people. They know what's going on. And so many people believe that chicken is health food. It is the worst animal food, I believe, that you can eat. And so often people will say, well, I don't eat red meat. And I want to say, well, please go back and eat red meat. Just stop eating chicken. And this is for two reasons. One is, on the ethical point of view, the cow is a great big animal. You can serve a lot of people beef from one death. Chicken is little bitty, doesn't make a whole lot of nuggets. But on the human health front, if you go to the scientific literature and you look at the carcinogenic properties of chicken, we're talking prostate cancer, breast cancer. If you look at the microbial problems with chicken, chronic urinary tract infections that bother so many women, particularly older women, it's the chicken. So really to get off this and then to just come to see, there's a wonderful pig up in Canada. They're probably all wonderful. We just don't know them. But this particular pig is named Esther the Wonder Pig. And she was adopted by a couple of guys who were meat eaters. They just, you know, this pig needed a home. We'll take in this pig. They thought she was a potbelly pig. They thought she was going to be little bitty, you know, maybe 100 pounds or something. Well, she's over 400 pounds and she lives in their house, and they now have an animal sanctuary because of Esther. But one day they were cooking bacon and Esther walked in to see what was going on, and they looked at one another and it was like, oh my God. So look up Esther the Wonder Pig. You may not need to do anything else.
That was wonderful. Everything you're saying is so wonderful.
It's interesting. This is Lee, your engineer, talking about animals having personalities and animals that you wouldn't think. Recently, my partner Rio and I were driving back from Florida, and there's loads of tolls as you drive back. And we pulled up to this one toll booth, and there was this raven right where you pay the money, you know, like looking in the cars, like wanting food. So we you know, we had some nuts and we tossed it out the window, and then 100 ravens came by. This is their game. In other words, they know that the cars, you know, people may have food in the cars, and they got like one shill, one little raven there, you know, hustling food. And as soon as you throw something, 100 of them come by. I mean, they're really intelligent animal, you know, birds.
Oh, birds are amazing. Yeah. And what they're finding out now is fish. You know, we always had the idea, well, fish, you know, they have fish brain. They can only remember things for 10 seconds or something. So not true. Jonathan Balcombe, who's an ethologist, someone who studies animals, is working on a new book about fish. There's an organization called fishfeel.org where you can get more information. But it's absolutely fascinating. When you talked about the ravens, it reminded me that some of these fish have businesses. They have scale cleaning businesses under the sea, and they will attract repeat clients. The clients that are good and that they like, they will try to curry their favor. And the other fish that haven't done so well, that haven't, you know, returned in kind, they want to get rid of them. They don't want them coming back. It's incredibly sophisticated. I think that if humanity experienced 10 seconds in time of knowing the sentiency, the intelligence, and the emotional intelligence of other creatures, the entire world would change.
Mm. Yes. And what about in terms of our planet, in terms of like the amount of resources needed to produce that pound of beef, or, you know, the clearing of, you know, forests?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I mean, we've known this information for a very long time. In the early 1970s, Frances Moore LePay wrote Diet for a Small Planet, showing how many resources it took to grow beef, but, you know, other grow the cattle that we turn into beef, and also raise animals for other animal foods, and how that impacted on world hunger. And now, of course, we know with global warming, methane goes out into the atmosphere. It's a much stronger global warming gas than CO2. And we seem to worry so much about automobiles and that. But if we could get rid of the methane within 10 years, those gases would be out of the atmosphere, where if everybody stopped driving, as if that's going to happen, it would take 100 years for the change to happen. So I'm not an expert on the environment, and I find that for myself, it's harder to grasp. You know, I can grasp that if I were to go get my blood levels taken and my doctor said, your cholesterol is way high, I would know, oh boy, I better stop eating animal products. And I know if I see a video about animals being tortured or killed, that's very real. The environment, it's harder for me to get, but it's still the truth. And there's a fabulous documentary, Cowspiracy, mm-hmm. that's on Netflix, and I recommend everybody watch it mm-hmm. and take good care of Mama Earth here.
Yeah. So we're going to be right back with more of the Good Health Workshop. You're listening to the Good Health Workshop on NewYorkTalkRadio.net and CatskillsRadio.com. And we are talking about the vegan diet with Victoria Moran. And I'd like to share a little bit of how you can keep in touch with Victoria. She has some wonderful presence on social media, but first, of course, look her up on her website at mainstreetvegan.net. You could also find her on Facebook and Instagram by punching in Main Street Vegan. And also, if you like to tweet, she loves to tweet. So you'll find her on Twitter as Victoria_Moran. How lovely.
Thank you. I do like to tweet. I love those 140 characters.
I'm on there myself. I do have fun.
You should hang around our station. We get all sorts of characters.
So Let's talk a little bit about some of the projects you're working on.
Oh, I'm so lucky. You know, we have the new book, a fairly new book, The Good Karma Diet, that's out there, and that's great. And I actually have another book with my editor, hopefully Tartar Penguin will want to take this one on too. And I'm doing that in conjunction with JL Fields. A lot of people know JL. She has a very popular blog called JL Goes Vegan. And she is a graduate of Main Street Vegan Academy. And we together are doing A Coach in Your Kitchen, the official Main Street Vegan Academy cookbook and lifestyle guide with some of our 200 graduates from 11 countries from Main Street Vegan Academy. So that's probably what I'm going to be spending a lot of this winter working on, which brings me to Main Street Vegan Academy, which, oh, such a gift. I'm so grateful that the idea just came to me. You know what? People really need help with this sometimes. They need coaches, but they need coaches who know what they're doing. And so we came up with Main Street Vegan Academy, which is a six-day miracle in New York City. It is an in-person program, and people say, you ought to put it online. And it's like, you can't put that kind of life experience online. We have incredible faculty members. We have Robert Ostfeld, who's a cardiologist. We have Marty Davies, who's a registered dietitian. We have animal rights people from our hen house, animal rights and animal law. We have fashion designers, vegan designers. We actually have Michael Parrish Dudell, who's a young vegan business whiz who has written the Shark Tank TV show's business books. So it's an incredible program. And then we have field trips because New York City is Disneyland for vegans.
And you actually came to Gravity East Village.
We did, and we go to High Vibe. I know you work with Bob Dagger, yeah. And Bob helps us understand more about raw foods and detox. We go to Moose Shoes, Vegan Shoes. We go to Leica Magazine. It's a beautiful kind of the vegan Vanity Fair. We go to their offices. We go to an Indian spice shop because, oh my gosh, the spices and herbs and the kinds of antioxidants you can get from incorporating some of those
in the
diet is incredible. So
your school will teach the individuals themselves how to live the lifestyle, but it also helps them to be a coach.
Well, we expect them to already be practicing vegans when they come because we're training them to go out and teach others. So our core curriculum is a foundation of vegan principles. So we're talking health, nutrition, environmentalism, animal rights, fashion, and then we have communication. So we're talking public speaking, coaching techniques, working with mixed and blended families, working with people with overweight, emotional eating, food addiction, that kind of thing. And then we have business principles because, you know, as a business person yourself, that's a whole new world. If you haven't been in business for yourself, whether full-time or part-time, you know, you can't go off and get an MBA. You've got to learn on your own. And so we have how to market, you know, how to promote, how to do social media, how to set yourself up and really make this professional. So our graduates are doing coaching and teaching. Some are writing books for real publishers. Many are blogging. Some are podcasting. We also have a woman who is starting a vegan fromagerie, a cheese shop in Brooklyn. We have a woman with a raw vegan ice cream company, Pleasant Valley Creamery in New York, Toronto. Another woman is starting a yogurt company, non-dairy yogurt. We have Cowboy Boots, Kat Mendenhall Boots out of Dallas. And she's actually starting a whole vegan boutique in Dallas built around the Cowboy Boots. We have a couple opening a convenience store.
So it sounds like there's also opportunities for networking within.
Oh, there's so much. It's amazing. Group. I mean,
sounds like you're having a lot of fun.
You know, it is really the best thing that I do. I don't have grandchildren. I have two grand dogs, but I feel that my 192 graduates from 11 countries are really like this wonderful kind of band of progeny out there doing amazing things in the world. So that's cool. And then my radio show, I'll just like you, I have a weekly radio show on Unity Online Radio, and it's a podcast afterwards on iTunes and Stitcher. It's called Main Street Vegan. Got a lot of wonderful guests on that. And then you mentioned in the introduction something really, really fun, and that is our feature film. Oh my gosh, we've been working on it so long, but we're now funded. That is a miracle. I've never done anything that required other people's money. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be filming in the spring in the Buffalo, Niagara area. And if anybody wants to hear our beautiful theme song for Miss Liberty, our movie, you can go to the Main Street Vegan website, click on feature film. And there's a wonderful song called A Sanctuary Song by Daniel Redwood. And it's pretty thrilling.
So exciting. And what is the film?
It's about a cow who escapes from a slaughterhouse. You know, they do very often. This happens to be a fictional story. And the human drama around what happens with the cow is really, really exciting. The characters are so well-developed. They're so interesting. We've been working on it so long that I feel like I know them. It was my husband and I wrote the screenplay originally, and now we've brought in a professional screenwriter who's, you know, cleaned it up and probably is why we've gotten funding. But these people, you know, we have a slaughterhouse worker named Shakespeare because he's a Mexican immigrant, but he had a degree in English literature from a Mexican university, but now he's here and he's working in a slaughterhouse. This is the sort of thing that really does happen in this industry. So incredible people. We're hoping to get, if not an all-vegan cast, an almost all-vegan cast, so I'll keep you posted.
Wonderful. And your newest book, The Good Karma Diet, can you share a little bit about what makes that special?
Sure. It's really a two-part idea that I believe that the reason that health-conscious vegans have such wonderful lives is two very simple ideas. One is you're putting good food in your body, and that is going to make you feel better, not get sick, and also think more clearly because your bloodstream nourishes your brain and all that. But also there's this other level of karma, and that is when you put good out into the world by making a conscious effort not to harm others. That comes back to you. And how better could we live our lives on earth than taking good care of ourselves and taking good care of others? It pretty much wraps it up. And then all the rest is for creativity and learning and fun and having a great and wonderful life.
Well, I know that book also has a lot of recipes.
Yes, I worked with a wonderful young woman, Doris Finn from Toronto. She calls herself a raw food alchemist, and she really is. And oh, they really are splendid recipes, mostly raw. Some of them are also cooked, but lots of smoothies, lots of juices, and really bringing in some of these superfoods. Beet juice, for example, we know helps athletes. Turmeric is just an incredible antioxidant, and a lot of people take curcumin supplements with supposedly the active ingredient in turmeric, but the studies seem to show that just eating turmeric does even better than taking the active ingredient because the whole food is so powerful. And we've tried to incorporate as many of those magical superfoods, but simple superfoods. You know, sometimes people are afraid of superfoods because they think they're going to be so exotic and hard to find and expensive. But the fact is, a blueberry is a superfood. You know, here we are with Thanksgiving coming. The cranberry is a superfood. Anything green is pretty super. So they're really delicious recipes. I'm going to be having some for our Thanksgiving dinner.
And what's it like at home?
Oh,
is your whole family vegan?
Well, in my home right now, it's just my husband and myself and our dog Forbes. And Forbes has, you know, been a little bit harder to bring along to vegan. He's almost there. Dogs can be healthy as vegetarians and vegans. Cats, I wouldn't try it personally.
Some people have.
But my daughter is a lifelong vegan. Her name is Adair Moran. If anybody's interested in what it's like to be a grown-up lifelong vegan, you can look up Adair, A-D-A-I-R, Moran.com. She's a stunt performer. She's been the stunt double for the young Bruce Wayne on Gotham, the Fox series about Batman. She's also an aerial performer and a wildlife rehabilitator.
Strong.
She is
obviously
strong.
Very strong.
Oh my gosh, she's strong. Yeah, and her husband's vegetarian, and they make that work. You know, so many people are like, well, I'd be vegan, but you know, I'm single. How am I ever going to get married? Well, you know, you figure it out. And so they make that work really well. Their home is vegan, and then, you know, he does his vegetarian thing for himself.
It's kind of like my relationship. My boyfriend's a vegetarian. I'm vegan. I eat a lot of raw, mostly raw. When we go out, he has me order. He's like, you order, and we split everything.
That's so
and
nice.
That is his pleasure.
Yeah.
And when he's in my home, he's happy to have me make him a green smoothie for breakfast.
Sure.
And all of that. So,
and you're making him so healthy.
Yeah. And what he does when he's out there in the world, that's fine.
Exactly.
You know, so it's great.
Yeah, I had that experience too. My husband was a meat eater when I met him. He went vegetarian 2 weeks later, and he got off liquid milk about 3 years into our marriage, because we went to a farm sanctuary gala, and he saw a video about how the cow and the calf are separated. So many people don't know that a cow can't give milk unless she's had a baby. I mean, we know this about humans. We know this about cats, but we have this idea that cows just give milk their whole lives. Well, they don't. And when he saw that, he switched to almond milk. And then when he read Main Street Vegan, he went completely vegan. And it's so wonderful.
I love that he read your book.
He did.
And then he went vegan.
Yeah, of all my 12 books, it's the only one he ever read.
But it's interesting. The only one you live together and he's in it and watching it. But you laid it out so convincingly that put him over.
You know, I think it did, because there's so much about convenience, and especially people that haven't really grown up making food. I think it's so important to teach kids how to cook, even in a very conventional way, because once you've got the basics, you can switch over and you can turn that vegan, you can turn it raw, you can do whatever you want with it. But if you've never, you know, used a paring knife, it's pretty hard to learn how to cook.
Yeah, I have
as an
a lot
adult.
Of clients coming in, and I could just see that it's so intimidating for them to even, you know, cook quinoa or cut up a salad. It's just easier. People are in this like quick gratification mode. They just go out and buy it. They don't want to carry anything. I just came back from Miami. I was happy I brought my TriBest blender with me. It was only 4 pounds. I had smoothies all throughout the day. I felt great. I didn't interrupt my usual thing I do.
You guys are lucky in your relationships. Oh, you're so liberal about it. My boyfriend can eat what he wants when he's not with me. My partner, Rio, now is upstate, and she says before she goes, I'm watching you. You better not eat. I know you. You're going to goof off. I'm watching you from wherever I am.
That's a real connection you have there. Oh, well, I wanted, before, you know, our segment finishes, I want you to speak a little bit as a writer.
Ah, it's such a gift to be able to write. And I'm lucky that all I know how to do is words. I'm blessed to be able to know how to write, and I know how to speak. And I never had to think about anything else. You know, so many people have so many gifts. It's like, I don't know what to do with my life because I could do so many things. Well, I never had that problem because I knew I would do words. So I started writing professionally at the age of 14. I started writing for teen magazines. I got into my first Beatles press conference at 14. Quite a good start for a career as a writer. It's changed a lot. The internet has really change things. It's more difficult to make a living as a writer. Most writers have these 16-lane professions now where they're doing so many other things in addition to write. And yet, to really write well, you have to focus. You have to have some time set apart. So for me, when I am writing, when I'm writing a book, I take the morning because that's really when I'm closest to the muse and take about 3 hours to really write. I had a writing mentor who told me once that the human nervous system can only write 3 to 4 hours a day. Mm. You can research, you can do all the other stuff, but to really write and put those words together 3 to 4 hours and then stop. And that works really well because now I have all these other businesses and things to do in the afternoon. But I would just say to anybody out there who likes to write, who wants to write, get your work out there. You can start with a blog. You can do a newsletter. You can do guest blogs for other people's blogs. There are ways to get your work read now that there never were before. So even though I'm not sure that I would encourage a young person to go into journalism, I just don't know if they could make a living at that for the long term. But in terms of writing and keeping the day job, it's a magnificent thing to do. And your words just live on. And I mean, every now and then I'll see on Twitter or somewhere, somebody will quote something from a book of mine that's, you know, 15 years old, but it's all of a sudden new to the people that read that quotation.
Well, isn't it kind of like having a romance with the project? Like you're just in love with the journey of writing and creating your art.
It is exactly like that. And I find that there's a lot of distraction because of email and the things that we seem that we have to tend to now. But when I'm writing a book, it's a little bit like being pregnant. It's like, you know, when you're pregnant, you can say, look, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to take off early. No, I'm not drinking. All these things that are accepted because something is happening. And writing a book is sort of like that. You're pregnant with this project and you can say, no, from 8 to 12, don't talk to me and don't email me. Or if you do, you're not going to hear back from me. And I personally like to write in cafes. I like to go somewhere and just plug in and be in a corner. And there's all that energy around me. And I kind of translate that energy into the work. You know, some people like to be off all by themselves, quiet. I need a little bit of energy from the outside. Yeah. It's a magical process.
Well, it's been so great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
I'm so grateful, and I hope you had fun.
I had lots of fun with both of you in this beautiful environment. Oh my gosh, we're in an old building. I live in a new building, and I was just telling you as I came in, my soul starves because I'm in a new building, but I can visit wonderful vintage architecture and get fed in that way.
So we're going to sign off now. I want to thank New York Talk Radio for hosting this show. I want to thank Lee Cruzo, our engineer, also Pete Calandra for our music, and also come on down to Gravity's Village. Have a colonic, have a sauna, get a massage. Check out gravityeastvillage.com and also for my events, accentonwellnessnyc.com. See you next time.